The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Glenn Beck.
So imagine being the family of Mary Jo Kopechne. So many people in America don't even know that name now, shockingly, because it had been buried for a very long time because of a very powerful family. But Mary Jo Kopechne, 28-year-old campaign worker, speechwriter for Bobby Kennedy. She was the one that died at Chappaquiddick. If you don't know the story of Chappaquiddick, there's a new movie out that you need to see. But the story is shockingly told for, I think, the first time. And it's told in a very fair, I think, and charitable way. But you see this woman clinging to life, trapped in a car that has been driven off a bridge by Ted Kennedy, where she survives for 3 hours gasping for air. She's been relegated to footnote status. What's really sad is Mary Jo Kopechne isn't a person. She's a thing that happened to Ted Kennedy, that happened to him or happened in his life. She's a person. And the family is speaking out now. I believe this is their first national interview to talk about Chappaquiddick and Mary Jo Kopechne.
With us is Georgetta Nelson-Petoskey. She's Mary Jo Kopechne's first cousin. And Bill Nelson, who's Mary Jo Kopechne's first cousin's son. They are the co-authors of the book Our Mary Jo.
Georgetta, Bill, how are you?
Wow.
I'm well. How are you, Mr. Beck?
This is really a pleasure. I've been a fan for a long time, Glenn. It's a wonderful experience to talk with you.
Wow. Thank you very much. It's weird for me to talk to you guys because you're such a part of history. You were there, and nobody sees Mary Jo as Mary Jo. She's an event.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, she's kind of a footnote in history. She was just the girl who died in the car and broke our hearts to lose her. It was really sad and hard to deal with. Is my son on? Are you on, Bill?
Yes. Yeah, I'm here, Mom. How are you?
You may not be able to hear him. Bill, do you remember... any of this incident?
I was born in 1972, so I didn't have the pleasure of meeting Aunt Mary Jo, no.
Okay. And go ahead.
But over the time and growing up with my mother, of course, and knowing about Chappaquiddick, I went and searched for information all the time, and I could never find anything about Mary Jo. And that's really why we started to dig through all of the pictures and the letters and the stories and the memories from her friends. And we wanted to put together a book for the family. So that's how it all got started, because I didn't know who Mary Jo was, as did the rest of the world. No one really knew who this woman was, except that she was a boiler room girl.
I have to tell you, I would love to have you guys in studio and Georgetta bring the pictures I'd really love to tell her story. I think this is fascinating. My daughter sat with me. She's 30 years old, and my two nieces and nephews, and we watched Chappaquiddick, and I watched almost in horror that they knew nothing about it. They knew nothing about her. They had never heard. After the car went over, my daughter looked at me and said, "Please tell me he wasn't a senator after this." And I said, "Oh no, honey, watch how bizarre is this for something so huge to be buried for so long, and then now there's a major motion picture out about it."
Well, I'm very happy with the picture, and we were privileged to have a private screening, and we had our family and closest friends there. And my young niece cried at the... Go ahead, Bill.
At the end of it. We had about 40 people, friends and family, and they reacted in horror after the movie was over, because you're right, Glenn, they don't know. The new generation coming up don't know, and I'm shocked that it took almost 40 years or almost 50 years to make a movie about this story. And I think it was suppressed so many times over the years and not allowed to be made, I'm very proud of the courage that the filmmakers and the producers have in making this film. And like you said, they did it in a very fair and balanced way because they used the inquest testimony from what everybody out on that island that night said happened.
Yeah.
So you can't really dispute it. If that's the official record of what they said happened, you can't have fault with it then and say, well, we don't know the truth. Well, neither do we. So, you know, imagine how frustrating that is for her parents, Gwen and Joe.
Georgetta, when we in the movie, we see Mary Jo's parents, your parents.
Our mothers were sisters. So that was my aunt.
Okay.
Gwen.
Okay. So your aunt, and your uncle sitting there was did they find it strange that Ted Kennedy, sent somebody there and was, you know, screening everything and kind of taking control of their situation? Or did they find that a comfort at the time?
Well, at the very beginning, Gwen said she thought that they were sent to help them. But then they soon realized that they were screening everyone who was calling the house or coming to the house. And there were close friends of Gwen and Joe's that they would have liked to have seen because they could have given them real comfort. Our family was kind of scattered. I was living with my family in Rhode Island, and the bulk of our family is in Pennsylvania. Gwen and Joe were in New Jersey. So it took a few days to get everyone together so that we could comfort them. But she thought at first they were helping, and then later thought, maybe not. Maybe they were just screening who was going to say, well, ask him this or ask him that. But Gwen and Joe were destroyed. They were absolutely destroyed when their only daughter died. Uncle Joe said they wanted more children, but he said, if we could only have one, God sent us the best.
She seemed remarkable. I loved the way they portrayed her in this. They didn't get into anything salacious like an affair.
No.
I had always heard that they were having an affair. Were they or not?
No.
Okay.
She didn't particularly like it.
No. I don't think anybody really did.
She didn't. Well, they were all very young. He was in his 30s. She was 28. But she idealized Bobby. And that was the only thing that brought her out of the South. She was down South during the civil rights days. And we were very worried about her teaching school in Alabama. But when she had the opportunity to work in Washington with the people who were making the rules, making the laws, and making things better for everyone and equal rights, she came right up to Washington.
Yeah, she was a speechwriter for Bobby, right?
She helped him write his speech announcing he was going to run for president. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, she was smart. Yeah. Well, she was one of the older boiler room girls, too, though.
Explain what a boiler room girl is.
They were a group of women, all very intelligent, all very well educated, all committed to helping Bobby with the campaign and all the good works that he was doing. And they happened to work in this one room. I think it was windowless, but it wasn't in the basement with the boilers, no.
Can you guys tell me... because the one thing we all walked out of this movie saying is, how did she not get out and he did? Is there any?
Oh my God!
Are there any thoughts on this?
I wish I knew that. Mary Jo is a wonderful swimmer, and if she had, her face couldn't have been more than a foot from air, even though she was inside the car, trying to breathe the air that was in there. Why didn't she get out?
If you want my opinion,
go ahead, Bill.
If you want my opinion on it, when they did the inquest, there was blood that went down the back of her blouse, probably to the small of her back. They dismissed it as some sort of nonsense, as foam from her mouth. But I always wondered that. Why didn't she get out of the car? And I personally think that she was injured inside that car, and she may not have been all the way conscious either. I think instinctually, when John Farrar pulled her out of the car, instinctually, she had found an air pocket up by what would be the foot hole, because the car was upside down, so it would be where you would put your feet. That's a question that's puzzled us for years, and we don't have a lot of answers about Chappaquiddick, but what we've done is we'll give you who Mary Jo was. So we can tell you what probably didn't happen. For instance, this rumor about her being in an affair with Ted Kennedy. There's a good chance that that never happened because of who Mary Jo was and her upbringing and her Catholic and her values and things like that. So when you find out what didn't happen, it kind of leads you down the path of what possibly could happen. And I wish more people would do that, that were there or that know things. I wish more people would come forward with whatever little pieces of information that they may have, and that at least we know are fact. And then you can work backwards.
You think there is more information, more people that could come forward and tell?
I sure do, because there were more than Ted Kennedy on that island that night. There was multiple people. There's probably 8 or 9 or 10 more people that are alive today that at least know a little piece of the puzzle. And if you can take that little piece of the puzzle and you can deduce what didn't happen, then you can work backwards and probably come up with a good theory. I could tell you what didn't happen, and that's whatever they said at the inquest, because it doesn't make sense. None of it makes sense. So it's logically not possible.
What do you mean? What didn't make sense?
Him diving in the water and swimming across the channel. There have been multiple reports that that's impossible. The side of the car on the passenger side is absolutely crushed from the front fender to the back fender. Well, water doesn't do that. So going off a bridge and hitting the water does not crush an Oldsmobile. An Oldsmobile 88, they're made of steel, I believe. So there's a lot of stuff that we don't know or that has been left out of the big picture.
What do you think what do you think that means? Speculation?
Well, there's a lot of different theories out there. There was a theory that there was an accident before the bridge and that Mary Jo was hurt, which would also go towards the blood on her blouse and her maybe being disorientated too. There was a theory that he was never in the car when it went off the bridge. There was a theory that there were other people in the car besides Ted Kennedy. There was a couple other, maybe a woman or a man, or so there's a lot of different theories that kind of make more sense than the official version of what happened.
Yeah, and that makes, if there was an accident, she was hurt, and even if there weren't other people, for him to then push it off of a bridge probably would make a little more sense, because it doesn't. Go ahead.
I think the saddest thing for Gwen and Joe was that no one has ever come to them and said, I saw Mary Jo on the island. She was happy. She was looking forward to her new job. These girls all came together because they had scattered, and this was their last chance to see each other. Bobby had died. A few of them, including Mary Jo, had been chosen to clean up the office, send things to the museum, send things home, send things to the office. It was a very tragic task for them because they had loved the senator. And so this was a chance for them to be together. But no one has ever come to Gwen and Joe and said, I saw Mary Jo, she was happy, we were looking forward to this or that. And so they've never had the last few hours of their daughter's life. And I think that's a terrible tragedy.
None of the Boiler Girls ever got together with the family? And
no, they were at her funeral. But Gwen and Joe were so sedated, to tell you the truth, that and none of them were ever introduced to any of us, so we never got a chance to talk to them either. And afterward, when it was calmed down and they thought that, now the senator will come forward and talk to them, he did call them, asked them to come to Hyannisport, and they thought, now we'll find out what happened that night. But when they got there, they walked into a cocktail party. He came over and said hello and disappeared.
Gosh.
And so they turned around and went home and more or less hibernated the rest of their lives. But he never, as far as I know, never even said, I'm sorry.
Touching on that, not only did Gwen and Joe lose their only daughter in a highly publicized accident, car wreck, whatever you want to call it, but then they didn't get their daughter's last lives. Then they were abandoned by everybody that was there. And then on top of all of that, you got to remember that they got all these nasty letters from the public accusing them of hiding things or not getting an autopsy because they wanted to know if she was pregnant or some nonsense. And every anniversary, they go out to the mailbox and they have these nasty letters for pretty much the rest of their life.
I can't imagine what they went through. Okay.
We have those letters.
Can you hang on just a second? Because I want to continue our conversation with the family of Mary Jo Kopechne.
Glenn Beck.
Family of Mary Jo Kopechne is on with us. Bill, we lost your mom, but I want to ask you to, could we fly you in and bring the letters and the whole story and any speeches that she wrote? I would love to have you guys come in and share that history.
Absolutely. We would love to. That'd be an honor. I'm sure my mom would be very happy about that also. I got to warn you, though, she's the busiest retired woman I know. So, absolutely.
So let me just spend the last couple of minutes here asking about your what it would be aunt and uncle or great aunt and uncle, Mary Jo's.
Mary Jo would be my aunt. So,
okay.
Yeah,
so your great aunt and uncle, right? Lived this life of being so proud of their daughter, and then their daughter becoming this villain to some and an event to others. What was their life like?
We visited Gwen and Joe very, very often. We would go up and we would visit them. And looking back now, I was younger then. I was in my teenage years when we would visit them, early 20s. But looking back now through different eyes, I saw, like, especially Uncle Joe, he was pleasant, but he was hollow. I caught him one day looking out the window, and I wrote about this in the book. And I didn't realize till years later that he just seemed like he was waiting for somebody, and he was waiting for somebody to come home. And you can tell that he was off in a faraway place. And I'm sure he was thinking about Mary Jo at that time. You know, Mary Jo didn't deserve to go down in history the way that she did. And that's why we started her scholarship at university, or Misericordia University, and why we wrote her book, to set the record straight so that she and her life have an opportunity to do good, and through her scholarship to do good for education and for people who are, you know, furthering their education. And it's been very well received. It's been humbling to us that it's been so well received by everyone. It's really gratifying.
The name of the book is Our Mary Jo. It's available everywhere. And I haven't read it yet, but I hope that it picks the story up before and after the movie Chappaquiddick.
Yeah. Yeah. It starts from actually her heritage and where she came from. It continues up past her death into Gwen and Joe's life without her. It's a comprehensive look. And what we did is we took all the letters that we had received from people around the world, well, Gwen and Joe had received, and we had actually inherited them. And we put them in the book to tell Mary Jo's story through the eyes of other people, through her friends, her coworkers. Now she was great, but not because we say so, but because everyone who knew her said so. So all the people surrounding her had an opportunity to go on and be lawyers and be publicists and have very successful lives. So we'd only assume Mary Jo would also have done that too. So this gives her a second chance.
The name of the book is Our Mary Jo. It is Mary Jo Kopechne's story. The name of the movie is Chappaquiddick. You need to see it. It's unbelievable. Thank you so much, Bill.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
Hi, it's Stu, reminding you that ears are weird. Ears are really strange things, aren't they? They're kind of like these two holes on the side of your head, and you somehow are hearing this broadcast through them. I mean, it's very strange, and they're kind of just like sticking out. I don't know. It was an odd design, but, you know, who am I to question God? I mean, he probably knew what he was doing. I will say that most people, like, you know, the people over at Q-Tip, for example, they know what they're doing, too. They have told you via their box that cleaning your inner ear with Q-tips is not the thing you're supposed to do with them. That's a very strange thing. I think we've all believed for a long time that was the way you're supposed to clean your inner ear. Well, here comes WaxRx. WaxRx is a system that is actually designed to do this for you. It comes with everything you need to safely clean out your earwax and condition your ears. And they don't get plugged up. They don't get uncomfortable. They don't itch. They're not painful anymore. If you have an issue with this, go to usewaxrx.com. Usewaxrx.com. Get your reusable earwash system today. Use promo code radio for free shipping. Usewaxrx.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program to Pat Gray. Hello, Pat.
Hello, Glenn.
Did you just hear Mary Jo Kopechne's family on with us?
I did, yeah.
Unbelievable,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Pretty compelling.
Let me ask you this. Who is alive in history that we should be talking to? Who's alive that witnessed something? Like, I would have never thought that we could just reach out to Mary Jo Kopechne's family. I don't know why. It just didn't even occur to me.
Mm-hmm.
Tokyo Rose was living in, she died, I think, in 2010. We should have talked to her before she died. Who's out there that's a witness to history? And I'd love to hear from you. Just tweet me at Glenn Beck. I'd like to hear, who's a witness of history that we should go look for and talk to?
That'd be great. It's just to hear what it was like for them to go through that as a family member because you hear about is the Ted Kennedy side, which is really important. I mean, the Chappaquiddick movie really deals mainly with Ted Kennedy's side of it, and it's really important to know.
But I don't know about you, but when I saw it, you guys both saw the movie, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
When I saw it, I immediately thought, how did the family feel? How dirty did that feel? How awful?
I think at first they were real supportive of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But as time went on, they realized.
Yeah.
A guy left her to die.
Well, there was a scene in the movie I wanted to ask her about. We didn't get time. But she was friends with the Boiler Room Girls, right? Like this group of advisors and speechwriters and stuff, young girls that were around that in the Kennedy circles. They were meeting up at this house. And after this happens, they come back and in the next morning and say, hey, look, some crazy crap went down. Ted's at the police station. And one of the Boiler Room Girls, the friend of Mary Jo's in the movie, at least, it comes up and says, what can we do to protect Ted? Like, that was their reaction. Like, this is the person died. Your friend died. What can we do to protect
Ted? Yeah, if she really said that, that's pretty despicable.
It may have been a composite reaction, but I think it seemed, if my memory serves, that was the way they reacted generally.
Knowing that none of the Boiler Girls ever reached out to her family is weird.
It's weird. Mm-hmm.
I'm smelling food.
Oh my gosh, it smells so good.
So this is, what is this? This is Taste Test Day?
Yes. This is an important thing. As you know, we deal with international news all the time. Here on the program, very important. And the International House of Pancakes has a new new entry.
It doesn't get any more international than that news.
I think that is... okay, well, so hang on just a second. As we're eating these, what are these? These are the new Hawaiian sweet rolls?
Yeah, before you just jam them down your gullet, let's explain what they are.
No.
Hawaiian rolls you have around the holidays?
I love those.
In
the orange bag.
In the orange bag. Mm-hmm. They're kind of sweet, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have decided to make French toast out of them.
That's a great idea.
Which is a freaking awesome idea.
That's why they're international. That's why they're in every country in the world.
That's why.
Strawberry and banana, cinnamon toast, and regular.
Okay, so let me just point this out as we're eating this to tell you, just for science purposes only. Stu.
Yes.
Can you give me what Russia just announced?
Oh, sure.
This is interesting.
Wait, I can't eat when I'm...
I know.
There's not a heck of a lot of details yet, but
this is terrifying.
Yeah. The Russian military... is saying that the alleged chemical attack in Syria... Now they're saying, I guess it is happened. It did actually happen. The alleged chemical attack in Syria...
Right, at first it was fake news.
Right.
Huh, what happened to that?
Now it's not. The Russian military is saying that the alleged chemical attack in Syria was staged and directed by Britain. I mean,
wait a minute. The alleged was staged. I'm having a hard time with that.
All right, so we have this. What have you tried here, Glenn? Because
I'm not that impressed.
What do you mean you're not impressed? I think this is an interesting concept. It's not working for you.
Hawaiian rolls are the greatest things ever. I don't know what Hawaiian king came up with them, but if he demanded the island back, I'd give it to them. As long as they would continue to ship the rolls.
Yeah, I mean, it's good, but it's not awe-inspiring. Oh, I just spilled syrup.
It's not as good as it sounds.
No.
What's your reasoning behind that? I think that's pretty good. I mean, it doesn't taste, here's what I would say about it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't taste that much different than regular French toast.
Right.
Like, there's not a huge difference.
Well, I had very high expectations. Because those rolls are so yummy.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's pretty freaking good.
No, it's good.
It's good.
It's good.
I wouldn't spit it out.
Well, I would go farther than that. I would eat it, mm-hmm. and I would order it, mm-hmm. but it's not like, you know, I was expecting something just really remarkable.
I'm not going to an international city just to have it.
No.
I'll just go
I'm
to
not
the,
going to Brussels to get this.
No.
You wouldn't travel to Prague. The good news is, it's the International House of Pancakes.
Mm-hmm.
They're all over the world.
Right.
So whatever city you find
that
yourself
is good
in,
news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, look, this is a solid entry. It's a nice little.
It's not bad.
It's a nice thing to try. I mean, I think you're right though. If I go to, like, if I find myself at IHOP, which I tend to do,
you just wake up and you're there.
Yeah, like sometimes.
Sort of.
You're
sometimes.
An IHOP guy.
I am an IHOP.
Over the Waffle House.
I like Waffle House too. The problem.
Oh, I don't go to Waffle House.
The smoke
too much
situation
smoke.
Is a problem for me.
Oof,
at Waffle House.
Really bad.
But you know, like I like all the chain breakfast places. There's not any that I can identify that I don't like. But my kids really like IHOP. We do a pancake time on Saturdays, and a lot of times we'll go to IHOP. And if I'm at IHOP, which I am a lot, I would absolutely put this on my menu of selections to choose while I'm there.
I mean, yeah,
yeah. So would I.
But would I like? Would I? For, you know, quit my job and move to an apartment next door to IHOP so I can have it every morning until it expires? Maybe not. Maybe
not.
You
get a discount or something at IHOP? Why are you suddenly so, you know, this is
pretty pro IHOP, isn't
it? He's pretty like, hey, IHOP, I'm not saying anything bad about you.
No, I think I articulated that well. I wouldn't quit my job and move next to it. That's a knock on IHOP.
Well, is there a food you would quit your job for and move next to?
Thousands of food. Really, I think of it as excuses rather than foods.
Mm-hmm.
How can I justify quitting my job and moving next to a restaurant? I think about that often.
Well, the nice thing is IHOPs are always in the best parts of town.
They are. Yeah, no, it's pretty good. It's pretty solid, but yeah, it's not life-changing.
Yeah, it's not bad.
So
that's good.
By the way, the Russian military says that an alleged chemical attack in Syria was staged by Britain.
I've eaten all the fruit off the plate.
Mm-hmm.
That should tell you something, because there's still bread left.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I've eaten all the fruit off the plate.
What happened to your diet? You know, you're...
Shut up.
I don't eat things like this anymore.
Yeah, we've been getting harassed
just out of
about
curiosity.
This segment. Everyone keeps going, oh, you guys are not supposed to eat that stuff. It's a radio show. It's more important than a stupid diet. Okay.
Right.
People need to know the information about the International House of Pancakes' latest offerings. Get over your Glenn's health thing.
Thank you, Stu. Thank you.
It's science.
I am donating my... I am loaning my body out for science right now.
Think about the sacrifices you're making.
Amen, brother. Preach on.
You know, people, you know, a lot of people won't do the types of things you do. Like, you know, not everyone will go cover genocide in Syria.
That's right.
Not everyone will go to Rwanda in the middle of the Hutu-Tutsi dispute.
Amen.
And get on the ground.
Preach it.
And talk to the guys holding the machetes.
Speak
they won't
out.
Do that. And other people won't eat IHOP off their diet.
Amen.
Amen. You'll do that.
Yeah. You're an extraordinary human being.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I, you know, I feel a little uncomfortable with you guys pointing out how great I am.
I don't think you do.
I seem pretty comfortable.
You seem fine with it.
So this is your choice, I guess, America. Could we sit here and dissect all the leaks from the James Comey book today?
Of course.
Sure we could.
Sure.
Sure, we could spend lots of time talking about James Comey and all the observations he had about Donald Trump's hands.
But why?
Or we can tell you what the latest thing at IHOP is.
Can I tell you something? Honestly, why? What is it that there is to gain on any of this Comey stuff?
And I haven't read it, obviously, yet. But from what I've heard, there's almost nothing new in it.
Well, yeah, I was making this
there's nothing
point
new.
Earlier. Like when a book company, when stuff starts leaking out from a book, one of two things has happened. A journalist has received the entire book.
Uh-huh.
Whether they bought it, sometimes they mistakenly put it out at stores. Sometimes, you know, the book company could leak it to them. So they look at the book and they go through the book and they find the best stuff, the most important stuff that they think will make, you know, get attention to it. And they bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
That's part one. Part two is the publisher of the book leaks excerpts of the things they'll find to be most salacious so that people will start talking about the book before it comes out. If it's the publisher leaking details and this is what's coming out, we don't know if there's good stuff in the book yet. We don't know if there's real stuff in the book yet because they may just be leaking salacious details to get attention. Yep. And then when you read the substance of it, you may find that there actually is substance there.
But if there's On the other hand, galley of the book.
Right. If they have this whole book, they've read the whole book, and what you're hearing now is the most interesting crap in there,
it's a pretty bad book.
It's a giant zilch. And by all indications, it's that one. It's that way. They actually do have the book. They've gone through the book, and these are the things they find to be most important. That's really bad.
The only thing anybody's talking about is that dumb Russian rumor about the sex with prostitutes in Moscow and what went on there. And he just says he thinks it. He thinks it's possible that it's true. Well,
First of all,
we already went down that road, and it's not. The reason he thinks it's true is because apparently Trump asked him to go investigate this.
That's exactly. Can I tell you something?
That tells me it's not true.
That tells me it's not true.
Why would
if I had that out about me, and my wife would know. Mm-hmm. But I would say, I don't want that out about me. That is horrible.
Yes.
Go prove that is inaccurate.
And they're making a big deal out of it because everybody's saying, well, why would she even believe there's a 1% chance? Well, because he admitted to it, Ferris, multiple times. He bragged about it in books. So, yeah, she could think maybe he did something weird like that.
Yeah.
So go investigate it and show her that I didn't do it.
There's no way he did something
weird.
Oh, I don't think he did either. No, wait. There's no way she believes he did something weird. Would he go to Moscow and have sex with beautiful models? Yeah. And I think she would have fears that maybe he would do that. And I think she would be justified in that. That's not what this is. This is him buying hookers, which I do not believe Donald Trump would do. It'd be too big. Let's just take it the shallow way. It would be too much of a hit to his ego to have to pay for it. So he wouldn't. I don't think. The second part of that is the golden shower. Donald Trump doesn't shake hands. He doesn't like to shake people's hands. He's a germaphobe. You think that he's going to have somebody pee all over him or around him? No.
I hope not.
But I mean, it shows.
I don't think so either. I just don't think it happened.
I don't think it happened either. But to just show how far Comey is going to try to make this case, the point you brought up, Pat, he said something to the effect of, look, even if my wife thinks there's a 1% chance that something like this happened, I need to disprove it.
Right.
And Comey,
so go investigate it and show her.
And Comey's self-righteous line after that. What kind of marriage are you in if your wife would believe there's a 1% chance you'd do something like that? That is such a stretch. He's just saying, look, I want to make sure I disprove this so there's no chance at all my wife would believe it. I don't think she believes it, but even if there's a 1% chance, I want the truth to be out there. He's not saying that his marriage is so bad that she might believe it. Now, you may take that from other comments, but to stretch... Yeah. His comment there
into, twisted it completely out of proportion
into an admission his marriage is bad is ridiculous.
Yeah,
there's a lot of other evidence of those sorts of things.
Yeah, first of all, let's just be honest here for a second. Let's talk about the product as if it is the product that we all know it is. Donald Trump is not the king of virtue. As we hear from spiritual leaders all the time.
We didn't elect a pastor.
So we know his record with women. Okay? We know it. Now, whether it's the Stormy Daniels, let's just say all of that stuff stopped the minute he found his true love in Melania.
Right.
Okay? We know who he was in the past. You don't think Melania does?
Yeah, of course she
does. Of course there's 1% chance. Of course. It doesn't mean anything other than, hey, he's had this kind of stuff in his life before where, you know, he likes the youngest, hottest thing. You know, I'm not as young as I used to be. I'm whatever. Mm-hmm. Of course she would think that. And of course, a good husband would think, I don't want her thinking that way.
Yeah.
You remember the time that your wife found her first gray hair and you had to make a big deal out of how young she was?
Absolutely not, Glenn.
I don't remember that either.
It's never happened.
I don't think Jackie has a gray
hair. I just remember my father, who was a bad man.
Are you going to talk about this today on Pat Gray Unleashed?
The Comey thing?
Yeah, I'm going to go into that.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Coming up, Pat Gray Unleashed, Blaze TV, radio, podcast. And he'll also read books to you if you want later on, in person.
Glenn Beck.
If you missed any of the programs, just go to iTunes or to glennbeck.com. Grab the podcast. Have a safe weekend. We'll see you Monday.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.